Peak Wealth Management proudly presents Finding True Wealth with Nick Hopwood, where we believe by providing education and guidance, we help our clients make sound financial decisions, which ultimately puts them on a path towards their definition of true wealth. Now, here is your certified financial planner professional and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Nick Hopwood.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of Finding True Wealth. I am your host, Nick Hopwood, and today we're going to tackle a very boring topic, but we're going to try and make it as interesting and painless as possible. Our guest today will be Mr. John Dawson, who's a certified public accountant, and he's a partner at Landing & Reed & Dawson. And we're going to be talking about tax planning. And actually, you'll see, we went way beyond tax planning, but that was the idea when we sat down and cut the track, because we're at the end of the year. And I always recommend to all my clients, particularly small business owners, that they need to have their tax planning in line. And what it does is it allows you to go into year end with the peace of mind, knowing that you've paid in enough, or if you're gonna owe, it allows you to know how much. So you have a few months to put funds in place so you're not scrambling at the last second. I hope that one of the takeaways that you have from this recording is the value of professional advice, because there's so many things in this complicated tax code that someone like John can help you with. And I want to tell you a story. When I first went to go see John back in 2001, you know, he always asks me to bring last year's, I guess he'll ask anyone who's a new client to bring your last year's return. And I remember sitting in his office and he was looking at my return, which I filed on my own. And he was just like, "Are you serious? You did this?" And so we had to make some corrections. But even someone who has the financial expertise like myself, I would never do my taxes on my own. I always rely on the professional to get the best service and the best accurate work done. So like I said, John helps make a very boring and really horrible topic less painful. So I hope you enjoy our time here with Mr. John Dawson. All right, so I'm here with my pal John Dawson, who's a partner at Landing & Reed & Dawson. I've known John for over 10 years, and my favorite thing about John is that when you go see him over at the offices at LRD CPAs, you get to go up into the penthouse,
right,
to visit John, and he always had a stocked refrigerator of your favorite cold beverage. So, John, welcome.
Thanks, Nick. Glad to be here.
So, John and I are here, and we're going to talk taxes, and the idea is to do a little tax planning at year end. We're here in December. It's not too late to make changes between now and the end of the year, which can really help you come April. So when I go see John around this time of the year, the biggest thing that's on my mind is, have I paid in enough? Or am I gonna owe any more come April 15th? And if I'm gonna owe more, do I have that money, you know, in the bank account ready to pay? So do you have a lot of people that come to see you with this in mind?
Yes, I do. It's pretty much all I do in the month of December is tax planning, which really focuses just on good communication between me and my clients. A lot of the clients run small businesses, and I also do a lot of planning for high net worth individuals.
Okay, so a lot of those high net worth individuals might be small business owners.
Correct.
So let's talk about those specific people for a minute. What's on their mind when they come see you in December?
Well, the biggest thing on their mind is, what deductions can I pull into the current year in order to deduct those on my tax return and save taxes? So overall, tax reduction is what's mostly on their mind.
And also, if they're paying quarterly or even on payroll, they have to worry about penalty proofing.
Correct. Correct. So the way penalty proofing works is kind of defined as, what do I need to pay in over the course of the year through tax withholding to avoid any types of underpayment penalty if I do owe tax in April. And the way that works is there's a safe harbor method whereby you pay in 110% of your last year's tax, but if you make more than $150,000 a year, that increases to 110% of your prior year tax. The other method of penalty proofing is paying in 90% of your estimated current year tax, which is a little more difficult because you have to estimate what your earnings are going to be that year, and it's a little more difficult if you run a small business.
As a small business owner, you also have the opportunity to kind of play with your 401 or your SEP IRA or your simple IRA, but you could also contribute, you could go overboard and contribute too much depending on how much you make. So
right.
What do you see people doing as small business owners with 401s and
stuff? Well, it really depends on how many employees that they have. If I have a lot of clients that are what you call one-man operations or one-woman operations, that they're the only employee of their corporation. And in that case, you know, the best way to go would be to do a SEP or a self-employed pension, which gives the maximum write-off of $53,000 a year for 2016. That's the best way to go for a self-employed individual. You can also do that, you know, if you're filing a Schedule C, but the maximum's a little bit lower. If it's a company that has employees where they have to include their employees in whatever benefits they pay themselves, generally we recommend a simple IRA. It's called simple for a reason because there's no tax reporting, very few guidelines to follow. It requires a 3% match of the employee's gross pay if they participate in the plan. And an individual can defer $12,500 a year or $15,500 a year if they're over 50 years old. 401ks operate the same way, but the contribution limits are higher, $18,000 for a person or $24,000 for a person over 50 years old. The only catch with a 401k is that there are more regulations, more hoops to jump through. You have to file an annual tax return. There's testing that's required to make sure everyone is being matched properly and things like that. So the simple IRA is the best way to go. Those need to be set up by October 1st of the current tax year in order to take advantage of that. So many times I get with people earlier in the year to set those up because in December it's obviously too late to do that.
Well, thanks for over giving us the overview of all the different plans available. Of course, anything here on this call is not advice, but just general discussion purposes. What else? We talk about pulling forward costs. I think you already mentioned that, right? What are some examples of pulling forward costs?
Well, basically, tax planning for small businesses revolves around deferring income and accelerating deductions. Most small businesses will file on a cash basis, which means that you're only going to deduct what you actually pay for the year, and you're only going to record income on money you actually received, not billings that you haven't received yet. So by paying all your bills before the end of the year, make them deductible. Mm-hmm. If a client is contemplating making a large purchase, say in the near future, that they know they need to make, they may make that in December versus March in order to take advantage of that tax deduction earlier.
So they can control they can massage their profits a little bit.
Right.
Okay. What about those folks who don't own a business and they have a payroll W-2, which it seems like they have a little less flexibility and control over what that shows. What do you tell those people this time of year?
Well, you're right. They do have less flexibility. First and foremost, they need to pay themselves first. Max out all their retirement accounts that their employer has available to them, whether it's a 401k or a simple IRA. Many times I'll look in December at a pay stub that my client will use me to give me to do tax planning, and they'll only have, say, $5,000 put into their retirement plan when they can do $18,000 or $24,000. And in December, unless you have a big bonus coming, it's too late. You don't have that much room left in your check for the rest of the year to max that out. You know, so I remind them, you know, do that throughout the year, and that way by the end of the year, you're way ahead of the game. The other thing to do would be to, kind of the same as a small business, pull as many of those deductions that you have on the personal side into the current year, such as pay your winter property tax bill. Make those year-end charitable contributions. In fact, I just had Vietnam vets at my house, and I think I filled up their whole truck with stuff from my basement.
Good for you.
And, you know, make your December mortgage payment maybe a week or two earlier, so it gets posted to your account and you can deduct that mortgage interest earlier.
Is it also advantageous to have a baby before year end? Because my wife is expecting any day now, and I'm kind of excited about taking this extra deduction.
Yes, and as usual, Nick, your planning is working out perfectly. It's going to happen before the end of the year, I think, right?
Yes, it could be any day now. Fantastic. What about retirees? Because they might not be getting a paycheck. They're not controlling a small business. They have Social Security, a pension if they're lucky, you know, IRA withdrawals, stuff like that. What do you tell them?
Well, with retirees that have a pension, say a Ford or a GM or whatever, we always recommend that they have tax withheld from that pension, federal tax, usually at a rate of 10%, sometimes 20%. That way they avoid having to make quarterly federal tax estimated payments throughout the year. Also, when you have a pension and you're also collecting Social Security benefits, many retirees don't understand that those Social Security benefits are also taxable. And many people fail to have federal tax withheld on Social Security. That is available through Social Security to elect to have federal tax withheld. So when people don't do that, they need to also make quarterly estimates to make up that increase in tax somehow. Unfortunately, sometimes I have to give people a bad surprise where they may owe a couple thousand dollars that they weren't expecting because of the taxability of the Social Security benefits. And what we do is when we do their taxes in March or February or April, we avoid that problem going forward by setting them up on quarterly estimates or by having them increase the withholding on their regular pension.
Typically, it's much easier to increase the withholding. For whatever reason, people seem to really hate those quarterly payments.
They do. They hate writing that check. It's easier when it just comes out automatically and goes credited to your account. And sometimes, you know, people get old. They do forget. And, you know, sometimes they miss paying those estimates. Some people are very sharp. And like my mom, she's 86 years old and she pays them on time every time.
God bless her. And also, retirees over the age of 70 and a half, they'll be subject to a required minimum distribution on their IRA or 401k. So do you recommend withholding at the source with those withdrawals as well?
Yes, because most retirees that I deal with have a relatively significant amount of income, you know, usually at least $50,000 when you factor Social Security, even a small pension or IRA distribution, some investment income. It all starts to add up, and they also have very few deductions. Their house is usually paid off. Many times they don't even itemize their deductions. So, you know, with those two combinations, you know, generally result in some tax that's due.
And usually, at least once a year, I get a call from a client that failed to give their 1099 to their CPA, or they didn't enter in their 1099 into TurboTax, and then a couple of years later, they're getting a mail audit letter from the IRS. Now, my favorite thing to do is just give the letter to you, but it seems to me that because the brokerage firms are sending out their 1099s so late, the people are going ahead and filing their tax returns, and they're completely ignoring this 1099. And then the IRS is smart enough to realize that they did not incorporate that 1099 in their return, And now they get a letter that says they owe way more because the IRS thinks that there is no cost basis on that 1099. Right. So what's that all about, and what is the solution?
You're right. The brokerage houses and companies do send the 1099s out later every year. There's more requirements that they have now, reporting cost basis information. That's one of the holdups that you guys have. And many times they'll get a 1099 out by the due date, and then they'll send a corrected one a month or two later. And those cause problems as well. But what you're referring to on the cost basis information is that people will sell stock and not report it on their tax return, and the IRS will assess tax on the full amount of that sale without taking into consideration what cost basis you have on that sale.
Even if it was for a loss.
Even if it was for a loss. So most of the time, the tax due is nowhere near what the IRS is asking for, but it's not very fun getting a letter in the mail saying you owe $10,000 in tax, but generally it's much less than that and we can correct it.
So John, in your how many years have you been a CPA now?
I've been in the business for 28 years.
28 years. So over these 28 years, what is it, you know, what are these audit flags that you see in your own business or the ones that you learned about in the continuing education seminars? You know, what should people be worried about with getting audited?
Well, on the individual side, generally it revolves around deductions. If you don't own a business, you're very unlikely to be audited. The real audit flag is your income. If you make more than $1 million a year, you're 10 times more likely to be audited than someone who doesn't. That's a real audit flag. But on the deduction side, if let's say your charitable contributions and your mortgage interest are half of your income, that's an audit flag. You know, so the IRS looks at what are your deductions versus your income, and if it's a very high percentage of your income, your audit risk increases.
Okay. What about the election implications? There's been a lot of speculation that there'll be a new tax plan coming soon. You know, what are you reading about, and what are you telling your clients?
Well, obviously we have had a big change in government this year, or we will have next year. Republicans will control pretty much everything. And what they've talked about is reducing tax rates across the board, which sounds great. Obviously, they're talking about reducing the current top rate on individuals from 39.6 down to 33, and reducing the tax brackets from, I believe there's 5 now, down to 3. I think it's a 15, a 25, and a 33% rate. That's on the individual side. On the corporate side, the top rate is currently 35%, which is one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world. The president-elect wants to bring that down to 15%. I don't think that's going to happen. I think where we're going to end up is somewhere around 25% for the top rate. What's exciting to me is that they're also talking about giving that rate not just to regular corporations, but to S corporations and LLCs, which are basically pass-through entities and subject to normal individual rates. It could be a huge win for business people.
All right, so if someone owns an LLC and they make 400 and some thousand, right now they're paying 39.6. If the corporate rate goes down to 25%, and that applies to an LLC or an S corp, that means that the people that are making 400 and some will only pay 25%.
Correct.
So we'll have to watch that really closely.
Yeah, and remember, those are graduated rates. So all your income doesn't go at that rate. That would be the top rate that would be subject to. The other thing we're thinking of that's going to happen is the surtax of 3.8% on investment income that started a couple of years ago with Obamacare as a way to cover health insurance will also go away. That is a tax on investment income, rental income, basically any type of income other than W-2 or business income for people that make more than $200,000.
And we call that the Medicare investment tax.
Medicare investment tax. It's exactly right.
So today, if you have a capital gain, let's say you bought something for $10,000 and you sold it for $11,000, you have a $1,000 capital gain. You'd pay your 20% capital gains plus the state tax,
right,
plus the Medicare tax for, in Michigan, approximately 28%.
Yeah.
And that 4% would be going away then.
Correct.
Under some of the proposals.
And this is really important for people who are selling their business or are going to have a huge capital gain, because that Medicare investment tax alone can amount to tens of thousands of dollars.
So what I'm hearing is, if we have lower taxes next year, that makes it even more important to pull forward costs into 2016, because we might have lower taxes in 2017.
Exactly. I've got a few clients right now that are in the process of selling their business, and they're putting it on hold until they know what tax rates are. They've actually found a buyer already. They're saying, well, I'll take a deposit to lock you in, but let's not sign the deal until maybe we know what tax rates are going to be next year.
Understood. There's a lot of people they ask me, on their investment statements, how long do I need to keep my statement? And I'm sure they ask you the same thing. How long do I need to keep these tax returns? What do you tell them?
General rule is 3 years for the documents that support your current tax returns, because the IRS can only audit you going back 3 years on a typical audit. There are other circumstances where they can go back 7 years if they find a substantial understatement of income or detect possible fraud. We usually say 4 years to be safe.
Okay.
It's a good idea to keep your actual tax returns for as long as possible. The actual documents to support that, like your receipts and your bank statements and all that, generally 4 years. Other items that you may need to keep permanently are for assets that you purchase, real estate, rental properties, trusts that you may have that are ongoing until you ultimately sell that asset or the person is deceased and the trust is closed out. You can dispose of those 3 years after the disposition of those assets.
Now, I'm glad you brought up trust right there, because trusts have special taxation as well. Like if you set up a trust and then you pass away and the trust has to stay open for your beneficiaries, what's the tax treatment on those?
Right. So with a trust or estate, when a person passes away, a separate entity for tax purposes is formed. Most people have a living trust or create a trust before they pass away in order to make it easy for their beneficiaries to transfer the assets to who they intend to get that money. An estate under $10.5 million this year, each individual gets a $5.45 million estate tax exclusion. So double that for a couple. Anything under that does not require an estate tax return filed, but it still requires that a trust return be filed, just to show the disposition of those assets and, you pay tax on those for any income earned after death up until the point that they are transferred to the beneficiaries. Generally, they don't pay much tax at all. It's really just a vehicle for passing the assets on to the beneficiaries. The real problem comes in with the trust when the trust holds annuities or IRAs.
And on the topic of the estate plan, the estate tax exemption, the gift tax exclusion ties right into that. And people are always asking, about this $14,000 annual gift tax amount. But really, it doesn't matter unless they have that $10 million estate.
Exactly.
Can you explain that for people? Because that's a very common misconception.
Okay, so there's an annual gift tax exclusion, like Nick said, of $14,000 per person per year. You can do that to any person you want, whether it's a friend or relative, with no tax reporting at all. The person receiving the gift doesn't have to report it. The person making the gift doesn't have to report it. If you go over those limits, say you buy a house for your son for $100,000, that would be a reportable gift. So that is reported on a gift tax return, but you don't pay any tax. You just put the IRS on notice that you're using up part of your estate tax exemption that you're never going to use anyway. So many times people will ask, do I really need to do this? My answer is yes, because you're required to do it. The problem is when you don't do that and then the IRS may find out about it later, they're going to assess tax on that full amount because you never filed a return.
Yeah.
So the way to, as a preventative measure, you file the gift tax return, report it. You don't pay the gift tax. You can elect to pay it, but people never do because all they do is put the IRS on notice that they're using up part of their estate tax exemption.
Gotcha.
Going back to the issue on the trusts, and Nick and I work very closely on a lot of trust with beneficiaries. IRAs, like I said, are a little problematic within a trust, so we always recommend that people make the beneficiaries of their IRA directly, make a direct beneficiary of their relative, not the trust. Do you agree with that, Nick?
Well, I always leave it up to the attorney,
okay?
But I know what you mean, because if the trust is the beneficiary, then creates a lot more work sometimes. And
it creates income in the trust that's taxable. So then the money has to be distributed back out to the beneficiaries in order to avoid that tax. You can avoid that whole issue altogether by making the beneficiaries direct beneficiaries of the IRA and bypass the trust completely.
Right, and then you can do a stretch IRA. So the beneficiary, the kid, can use that IRA and take a smaller required minimum distribution each year for the rest of their life.
Right. They have a lot more options that way.
Yeah. Back in the day, about 15 years ago, it had to be taken out within 5 years. But today's tax code allows for a lifetime stretch.
Mm-hmm. Another issue we see are with annuities, non-IRA annuities that represent all taxable income that have a trust named as the beneficiary. That's okay, but you have the timing is crucial, because in order for the income to be passed through to the beneficiaries, it has to be done within the same year. And many times people don't come to me until after the end of the year. They're new. It's a whole new world to them, being a personal representative, being an executor or a trustee. They're not sure what their requirements are. And sometimes it's too late, you know, and there's actually ways we could fix that even when it's too late, which we've done. But we like to let people know, call us sooner than later.
You know, the purpose of the podcast was tax planning and what you can do before the end of the year, before it's too late. And we covered that in the first few minutes, but, you know, we've covered a lot more than that. And I hope there's a second takeaway besides what you can do in advance of this particular tax year ending. The second takeaway is, if you're trying to do this on your own, good luck. I mean, obviously John is well-versed in all of these different areas, and we covered a lot, and there's probably only scratching the surface. But if you're trying to do this on your own, you know, I think that I think everyone can benefit from using a CPA like John. So John, what's your website? How can people get a hold of you if they want to talk further?
Our website is lrdcpas.com, lrdcpas.com. Get a hold of Nick and he'll get a hold of me. I think this podcast was great. It's the first one I've ever done, and I appreciate the invite from Nick. But Nick and I have worked together for many years now. We trust each other. We actually do a lot of communication behind the scenes to just get things done, and I appreciate that very much.
Well, John, thanks for coming on Finding True Wealth, and thanks for being our resident tax expert. Hey, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in to Finding True Wealth. Hopefully you found this topic of value here at the end of the year, and we got a couple more weeks, so it's not too late you know, to consider for those small business owners, deferring income, pulling forward costs, contributing to your retirement plan, making a donation to charity, paying those property taxes early, making an extra mortgage payment, stuff like that to benefit your 2016 tax return. And if you have any further questions, please reach out to me. You can see all of our work at peakwm.com. And if you're not subscribed, please check that box today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Peak Financial Minute with Nick Hopwood. You can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes and the Android Marketplace or by visiting www.peakwm.com. Peak Wealth Management is your premier wealth management partner. Plan, protect, peak. Securities offered through Regulus Advisors, LLC. Member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Peak Wealth Management, LLC, a state of Michigan registered investment advisor. Peak Wealth Management, LLC is independent of Regulus Advisors.